And this next subject we have is the CBS article on Ukraine that I came across that I've decided I would share with you. So, let's get into it. So the article opens up with Zelensky. It's a Zelensky interview, it's an article covering Ukraine. So it's specifically a Zelensky interview, and he talks about having stabilized the situation. He says, quote, it is better than it used to be 2 or 3 months ago when we had a big deficit of artillery ammunition, different kinds of weapons, end quote. So he's coming out the gates talking about, oh yeah, we had this massive shortage of artillery and ammunition. That's going to be chronic. Right? That has been chronic throughout this war. And it's gotten, apparently according to him, that's gotten slightly better in recent months. But considering that Ukraine is done, they have no air defense missiles, and they're always at a disadvantage in artillery, and there's no artillery available for them. I think that he knows as well as I do that this is only going to be downhill from here, especially as that whole $61 billion for Ukraine thing is just not going anywhere. And it's not going to go anywhere the worse the war in Ukraine gets. Because that gives more leverage. It'll make the advocates for the aid louder. But the war going worse for Ukraine makes it easier to say, look, they're losing. We don't need to give them money to a losing horse. No need to bet money on a losing horse. So I'll digress. He's talking about the ammunition shortage. This is chronic. We've seen this throughout the entire war. They occasionally get these influxes of weapons and munitions, but we've also seen how increasingly strange the sourcing of these weapons and ammunition comes from, particularly ammunition, because we don't produce it. We don't produce enough of the ammunition. We don't produce enough of the air defense missiles. And we've been able to source this, we being the United States and Europe, we've been able to source this from various other means, from our stockpiles around the world, from Israel, from South Korea. We've gotten shells and missiles from many places around the world, but those reserves have been used up now. Now it's a matter of, are we producing the shells to fulfill these promises than these blank checks we keep writing to Ukraine? And the answer is no. Right, the answer is no. CNN just admitted it not that long ago that the Russians are outproducing us 3-1 in artillery. And by us, I mean all of NATO in artillery and a number of other theaters of military production, which is what I've said. The Russians are outproducing all of NATO in every aspect of military production except for planes. And even that looks like it might be changing. But for the time being, I suppose we could take solace in the fact that they aren't. But this is the backdrop for Zelensky's interview here. So keep that in mind as we go through this and see what he says with all that in mind. He said that we totally didn't see the big, huge counteroffensive from Russia. And that's a quote. We totally didn't see the big, huge counteroffensive from Russia. He goes on to say that they didn't have success. They didn't have, end quote. Now, he says a major Russian counteroffensive. He says they didn't have success. There hasn't really been a major Russian offensive. What he's likely referring to, though, is the Russian active defense and Russia going, you know, a little bit beyond active defense as they've done recently. Because Putin has announced that it has happened, that they're moving beyond active defense. So perhaps this actual shift away from active defense towards a more aggressive posture happened before he announced it, and this might be what Zelensky is referring to, a steady offensive operation, not swift offensive operations, not really heavy-handed offensive operations, but offensive operations nonetheless. And this might be what Zelensky is referring to if we give him that benefit of the doubt. But he's saying that the Russians made this counteroffensive and that it's been defeated. Except the Russians, their concept of active defense is not to sit there and bomb you with artillery and guns. It's actually to move forward and take territory away from you so that you can't hit their the important parts of their line. Like, they'll move up and deny you a good position, forcing you to take a position back. Then they'll withdraw and attack again. And you get a lot of back and forth with land. The land will change hands a lot. But what that does is it prevents the Ukrainians from settling into a position and bombarding Russian lines. And it prevents, and by being active and constantly moving around, it also prevents Ukrainian defenses and counter artillery batteries from locking in on specific Russian locations, which is what would happen in sort of static warfare. If everyone's just staying in one spot, you dig in and you hold your position, you become an easy target. So the Russian active defense is to move forward, take territory, force the enemy to take it back, and so you engage in that back and forth with the objective of luring the enemy out into the battle so that you can close in and destroy him. You know, and Scott Ritter talks a lot about this, and the way the Russians fight the war, your goal is to close with the enemy and destroy him, and that's what the Russians are trying to do. They want to destroy the Ukrainian military, and the way to do that is to force them to come out from their trenches. You're not going to do that if you're in your trenches. You all right? You have to get them to come out, so you have to come out. So it's a risky game when you do that, but I suppose the Russians have been very, very effective at doing this, as we can tell by the casualties, which, according to retired Polish generals, the casualties ought to be measured in the millions, not the hundreds of thousands, which is an astonishing thing to say when we're already working off of the assumption that 500,000 deaths equates to 1 million casualties in total. We're going to get a really nasty surprise when we see the real casualty figures after this is all over. And they're not going to be pretty. I can guarantee you that, especially since the Great Offensive hasn't even begun. But let's get deeper into this article here. He says the Russians did this huge counteroffensive, but they haven't been successful. And by that, he means the Russians haven't broken the lines. But the lines are getting weak. He doesn't say that. But he sort of hints and alludes to that. He says that they're... Where am I? Right, there we go. Usually, with static warfare, it's just you stay in place, you get hit, you know, but the Russians aren't doing that. So he's probably referring to what the Russians call active defense, and their shifting of the gear up from that to whatever the hell they're at now, where they say they're beyond active defense now. So whatever that's supposed to mean, that's probably what he was referring to, with the Russians getting more aggressive than they've been for a good while now. So them being more aggressive than he's used to, he goes, oh, this is an offensive, this is a counteroffensive, and it hasn't broken our lines, so we've defeated it. And, you know, that might be logical to assume if you're in the trench, in the thick of it, and you're looking at it, oh, they're more active than they were months ago, this must be an offensive. Because obviously that's what that would hint to. And now, the article says that Zelensky acknowledged that the invading Russian troops and their seemingly endless supply of missiles and shells had destroyed some villages. Now, there's an interesting admission. Now, if you weren't paying attention, it might have just flown over your head. And shoot, I missed it. I came like within centimeters of missing it because I was trying to get through the article to see if there was anything deeper. I was just sort of skimming through the article to see if it was worth bringing to the podcast. And I'm like, wait a second. That is a very crucial admission. And I was sort of reading, as I'm reading, I'm tying in what the article is saying to what I've been hearing from my more trusted sources. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually pretty substantive. But right there, let me go back to it. Zelensky acknowledged that the invading Russian troops and their seemingly endless supply of missiles and shells had destroyed some villages. Now, the goal is to get you to sympathize and go, oh my God, the Russians destroyed these villages. How could they? That's the objective of the writing. That's the intention of the writer. And, you know, my English class majors know this, you know. The intent of the author is something to keep in mind. But right there was a very crucial admission. And you might have caught it that second time around, but they just admitted that they have been lying about Russia running out of missiles for the last 2 years. I'm not talking about, you know, Zelensky, Ukraine. I'm talking about CBS, the propaganda press, who then they've been telling us the Russians have been running out of missiles since May of 2022. They've been running out of missiles. They're running out of ammunition. They're running out of everything. Except now, it's they're overwhelming their seemingly endless supply of missiles and shells. Oh my God! It's the Russian steamroller. How could we have ever seen this coming? I thought you were winning. I thought Russia was running out. How can they be running out? And now they have an endless supply. Because at no point did they acknowledge that the Russians fixed this until a month ago with the CNN article. So they just flat out admitted, while trying to get us to sympathize for Ukraine, that they've been lying to us about the dynamics of this war. And that's a very crucial admission that I don't think we should just, you know, let slide and let slip over our heads. We should grab onto that and really bite down and chew into it. You know, those of us who, you know, if you didn't believe me, you know, there you go, that they've been lying. if you didn't believe me up until this point, I still thank you for listening to me. So you rant about geopolitics. Your views are very much appreciated. But alas, that's a huge admission. And I think that what we're starting to see now, especially with that story about the French officials telling their news stations to get ready for a Ukrainian collapse, what we're starting to see now as we move into spring and as we get closer to the summer, we're going to start to see these news agencies try their best to get ahead of this story, to unpack all of that propaganda in a considerable and, you know, slow enough time frame that the normies won't notice, but a lot of them are still going to notice, you know, and shift over to, oh my God, the Russians are preparing this massive offensive. Who could have seen this coming? And they're going to paint it that way. So I think that's what we're going to start to see. They're going to try to get ahead of the story before the Russians just come in and fucking obliterate everything in sight, especially in the wake of this terror attack on the concert hall in Moscow, where there has been blood and the Russians are going to be out for blood, especially since they view the Ukrainians as being responsible. Now, again, we don't know that for certain, but what matters isn't necessarily what we know for certain. What matters is what the Russians think. When we're talking about the actions of the Russian military and of the Russian high command, what matters is not what we think. What matters is what they think. And what they think is that Ukraine was involved, and they think that that is a certainty. Now, they could be proven right. They could be proven wrong. What matters is what they think, because they will make decisions and policy, and they will take actions off of what they think. So it's important to understand that they are going to be out for blood in the not too distant future. And there's a reason I named that episode No Russian, because a similar consequence is going to befall Ukraine. And anyone who's ever played Modern Warfare 2, you know that after that mission, when they find your dead body, because, you know, in Modern Warfare 2, you play as one of the terrorists with Makarov's group, and you shoot up a Russian airport. Yeah. When the Russian authorities find your dead body, and, you know, Makarov betrays you, and he shoots you, and then he leaves you with his... He leaves you, he and his crew, they take off, and you're just laying there on the ground, bleeding out, and the Russians find you, the Russian authorities, they find you, and they go, oh, look, it's an American, and he was responsible for... Something similar is going to go down with this, although not, you know, one-to-one. Oh, we found a Ukrainian over here who shot up a Russian concert hall, and he was a part of the Ukrainian government. He was an undercover asset. You know, it's not going to be like that, probably. Oh, my goodness. But a similar consequence is going to befall Ukraine, because after that mission, that's when the Russians invade the United States. In Modern Warfare 2. It's such a fun game. As unrealistic as it is for them to deploy the massive amounts of men that I end up gunning down in the game, it's not so unrealistic if you're Ukrainian, because the Russians have a border with you. No Russian is what just went down with that concert hall. And in the place of the United States, it is Ukraine. Or perhaps, if you want to go there, in the place of the United States, well, the United States is still there, but in place of your character, what's your character's name? I forget the name of the, because it's a different guy than Roach. But in the place of the guy you play, that guy is instead Ukraine. and America is still responsible. Now, I don't think the Russians are going to come invade America. I don't think they want to do that. I don't think they feel the need to do that. But they will invade Ukraine. They will stomp all over Ukraine. And in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, you after we're done fighting the Russians in America, we go to the campaign in Europe, and the Europeans aren't doing so hot. They were not doing very hot at all. The Russians were like halfway through Germany. Now, if NATO's stupid, we'll get a one-for-one replay of Modern Warfare 3 through the European perspective instead of the American. But I think a similar consequence from that game is going to play out for the Ukrainians, as strange as it is to compare real-life events to a video game. I think that something very similar is going to happen. I just, you know, that's just a very easy comparison for me to make, and so for those of you who've played the game, it'll be easier for you to conceptualize and understand what I'm trying to get across here, and I hope for all my non-gamer fans, you understand what I've explained to you. But alas, in the wake of that terror attack on that concert hall, the Russians are going to be out for blood when this offensive comes. And Zelensky is talking about endless supplies of missiles and shells, and the Russians aren't even trying yet. Yet. CBS is admitting that they've been lying to us about Russia running out of missiles for 2 years. All these news agencies, the French telling their news agencies, get ready for the collapse. The Polish general, the casualties are measured in the millions. All these little cracks in the narrative that we've been sold for 2 years, the dam's going to burst. The dam is going to burst, and these news agencies, mark my words, a lot of them are going to, from this moment onwards, they're all going to try to start getting ahead of this story, getting ahead of this storm. Because it's coming. And it's a big one. And it's going to wipe Ukraine off the face of the earth. And I think Zelensky knows this. Because throughout the article, you get this air of not just depression, but desperation. And we talk about NATO getting desperate, but Ukraine and Zelensky are perhaps going to be the ones most desperate of all, because they're the ones who are going to deal with the direct consequences of this war. Everyone else is going to get the aftermath. Everyone else is going to get the sideshow. Ukraine is going to bear the brunt of this, and everyone in Ukraine knows it. Especially Zelensky, because he was led down this road by us. If you remember, we told him, hey, don't make peace with the Russians, you know, don't make any concessions. We're going to give you all this aid, you're going to be able to win the war, you're going to get the Donbass back, you know. We sabotaged that man. We set him up for failure. And now he, there's talk that the neo-Nazis in Ukraine wouldn't allow him to make peace anyway. He's, for lack of a better word, fucked. He's fucked. And his only option that he feels is to double down on a losing gambit. And that's on a human level, that's got to be one of the shittiest feelings you could possibly have. To realize that the only option available to you, if you want to live, that is, the only option available to you is an option where you know you're going to lose. And you still might die, but you might live. It is a tragedy. It is a tragedy. And the end of this war will be the definitive end to the tragedy of Ukraine. The little series of episodes I have. But this is where Zelensky is. And he knows he's on the eve. He knows he's on the edge of that big calamitous crisis that is right around the corner. Zelensky, he's on this interview talking about his chronic shortage of ammunition, artillery shells, which we can't supply because we don't have the production. Air defense missiles, we can't supply, we don't have the production. And he said that Ukraine was not prepared to defend against another major Russian offensive expected in the coming months, end quote. Again, what he faced was not actually a Russian offensive. It was just Russia being slightly more aggressive than they've been in the past few months. And he says that if that happens again, happens, again, they're not prepared to withstand that. So what do you think happens when the actual offensive comes? When the Russians actually start trying? What do you think happens when the backbreaker offensive comes? Which he expects, the article says that he expects this offensive to come in either the end of May or in June. Folks, it's April 1st. You're talking on a short time frame, on the shortest of time frames, you're talking 2 months. 2 months from now. To maybe three. That's no time at all. If you're in Ukraine's shoes, that's no time at all. You're out of time. If that's when you think this is going to happen and you feel, and you're admitting that you cannot withstand another blow like that. And I'm sure, and he's comparing what's coming, what he thinks is coming. Well, he's comparing what he says is coming to what has come before. And he's saying that we can't withstand that. He knows, he has to know, that it's going to be much worse. If the Russians are actually going to switch from what they call defense to offense, if what they call defense is to the Ukrainians an offensive, then God help the Ukrainians when the Russians switch to what they consider to be an offensive. And Zelensky knows this. He knows that when the Russians decide to switch to what they consider to be an offensive, not what he considers to be an offensive, but what they consider to be an offensive, he knows it's over. He knows it's over. He knows he's at the end of his rope. This is a desperate and depressed plea. Now, I can sympathize with him, but I'm still going to sit here and tell you that there is no reason my country should be giving him any more aid. So don't take my sympathy for what it is. Sympathy, not a call to action. But it is sad. Because, you know, accepting responsibility for what has happened, we set him up for this failure. Our administration set him up for this failure. And now he's going to have to deal with the consequence while we walk away and slink back into the chair on our side of the ocean. Where we should have been from the start, and Ukraine would have been in a much better position had we literally done nothing. But this is where he's at. Please give us more ammunition. We can't defend against another major Russian offensive, which we expect to come in May or June. Now, the article continues with Zelensky complaining that his backers, and this is sort of the subsurface rift between Ukraine and its backers, is that we have goofballs in our country who will sit there and go, we need to freeze the conflict. Oh, the conflict's in a stalemate. We need to freeze the conflict. And they're content with that. We need to prevent Russia from getting more land and freeze the conflict and get a ceasefire and hope that the ceasefire lasts forever. Because they don't ever want to just admit defeat. They don't ever want to just end a war. They want the war to go on forever, but they want it to be a frozen conflict. And here's Zelensky speaking on behalf of his country in a real way, in a real strategic way. He says that his backers are content with a stalemate, but that this is not optimal for him or for Ukraine. It is not optimal for them, and that's for the obvious reason that it doesn't win them the war, and it doesn't end the war. Freezing the conflict doesn't end wars. The war between North and South Korea, which is the common comparison for what these goofballs who call themselves strategists and analysts want to do in Ukraine, that war isn't over, and at any moment in time, the North could just start raining missiles down on the South, and we'd have no heads up, we'd have no warning, it'd just be war. And the same is true with China and Taiwan. The same is true with Israel-Palestine, and that one flares up all the time. The same is true for Kosovo and Serbia. The same is technically true for Turkey and Cyprus. This is not a good standard to have for your goals in foreign policy. But this is what these people who think they know something about geopolitics are openly advocating for. And here's Zelensky stating the obvious on behalf of his country. That doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody. And ironically, it doesn't even help the people proposing these silly ideas. Because what does having a permanent ceasefire in Ukraine do for us other than leave open the possibility that the Russians just come back 2 seconds later? Oh boy, we can get Ukraine into NATO. And then what? Well, that's assuming we get them into NATO. What are you going to do? You're going to get a country with a border conflict into NATO? That's not the standard. The Russians are given time to reorganize their military based off what they learned in this conflict. Meanwhile, we've learned nothing. We still can't compete with the Russians in artillery. The Ukrainians would just go through the same exact mauling that they've gone through for these last 2 years. No one's going to move back into Ukraine. If it's a frozen conflict, no one's going to move back to Ukraine. Who would do that? If I was a Ukrainian and I managed to flee Ukraine, why would I go back if there's not an actual peace between my country and Russia? I'm going to be conscripted and I'm going to be stuck in the military waiting for a crisis that I know I can't win. Why would I set myself up for that kind of a failure? Especially if I'm like a dad, if I have kids, if I have a wife and kids, why would I set my family up for that kind of a failure? And that's a trait, a habit, a feature rather than a bug of the current ruling class in the United States. Their policies always set themselves up for failure, except for when it comes to expanding tyranny. But when it comes to, you know, solutions, proposing solutions for crises, they have no solutions. They have problem management. They don't have problem resolution. They have problem management. And they think that that's a viable alternative towards real peace, but it's not. And so you get these nonsensical ideas and you get these nonsensical policies of we're not going to call a ceasefire between Israel and Gaza a ceasefire. We're going to call it a humanitarian pause. We're going to call a humanitarian pause. It's so silly and self-defeating. And Zelensky is 100% right when he says that they're content with this, but that doesn't help Ukraine. It's not optimal for him or for Ukraine. It doesn't win the war. It doesn't end the war. Like, I'm sure he could accept defeat. I'm sure he could accept defeat. But what he can't accept is freezing a conflict and then being left to fend against the Russians alone when the Russians can come back across the border at any moment in time. I mean, and that's assuming that you even get this. The Russians have said they're not going to have a ceasefire. They're open to negotiations based on realistic terms and realistic expectations. They're not gonna have a ceasefire. The war is gonna go on while the talks are happening until a real resolution, a real treaty is reached that is, you know, legally binding to all the signatories, and they want us to sign. Now, granted, the only good thing about this is that we're not gonna be signing on any treaty here. I don't want the United States to be a security partner in Europe. I want the United States out of Europe. And that's the only good thing that's going to come out of this, is that us doubling down on fighting Russia keeps us away from any binding agreements like that to the Russians. That'd be one more treaty we'd have to rip up to get out of Europe, which is more trouble and more headaches and another purity test that most politicians in the United States simply wouldn't pass and wouldn't be willing to pass. Oh, we can't just leave every treaty behind. You know, that's silly shit. But Zelensky knows that he's at the end of his rope. And he knows that the people backing him have different interests from his own. They want the war to stay as is because they know that they can't win. He wants the war to end. Preferably on favorable terms to himself. But the people backing him want to fight Russia, and they're so pathologically hostile towards Russia that they don't actually want peace. They want him to stay at war with Russia. And there you have the conflict of interests. A conflict of interests that makes itself more apparent as he keeps asking for more, and not just that, but he's asking for more weapons and more aid, but the people he's asking for this aid from don't have the means of producing this in anything close to the quantities or on any kind of time frame similar to what he's asking. So you have another conflict of interests, a conflict of expectations there, where what he's expecting is something that we physically don't have the ability to supply him with. Now, he also, again, he called for more aid and more weapons, and the article describes the war as, quote, a grinding artillery war of attrition, where Russia not only has the upper hand with more firepower, but also firepower with a longer reach, end quote. So the Russians are outgunning them, and they are outranging them, and that is a devastating combo. Now, Zelensky emphasized that, quote, what's needed most are American Patriot missile defense systems and more artillery, end quote. So I brought that up at the beginning. He wants more Patriot defense, air defense systems and more artillery. But neither of these are going to manifest themselves as, again, the hard reality, this conflict of expectations versus reality. He is expecting us to supply these weapons and these weapon systems in large quantities. He's want large quantities of artillery pieces, large quantities of air defense systems, on top of equally large quantities of ammunition for these artillery pieces and these air defense systems. But we're not manufacturing either the system or the ammunition in anything close to the quantities needed to fight and to win a war of this kind against the Russians. And so we've dipped into our own reserves, thinking that the war would be over quickly, thinking that the war would be over by Christmas, and yet here we are. The war's not over. It's about to be, but not in the way that we thought it was. We're out of artillery. We are literally out of 155mm artillery shells. And here this guy comes along saying, we need more artillery. We don't have it. We literally don't have it. We have smaller calibers. But if we keep giving them smaller calibers, well, you need smaller and smaller artillery pieces. And those just aren't going to do the kind of damage that you need to compete with the Russians. And quite frankly, those don't have the range to compete with the Russian artillery. Because the smaller the caliber, usually the less range you're going to get out of it. And the less power that the shell has when it impacts. Assuming it's not a dud. And Zelensky knows this, but he is desperate to get his hands on whatever he can get. And the only way he can get it is to keep putting this kind of emotional pressure and baggage onto his backers, onto the publics of his backers. Because that's the only way he can even theoretically win. But it's just not going to be enough. It's just not going to be enough. And the ammunition, the Patriot missile defenses, and the artillery, they're not going to manifest. They're not going to manifest themselves. Simply because we don't got it. We ain't got it. Now, Zelensky also went on to deny the allegations that Ukraine was in any way involved in the recent mass killing that took place in the Moscow, that Moscow concert hall. He called the allegations ridiculous. And again, to be fair to him and to Ukraine, we don't know if they were involved, as we still know very little about the attack other than that ISIS has claimed responsibility for it and that the attackers were Tajik in their ethnicity, so from Tajikistan. So again, we don't know for sure if Ukraine was involved in this or if it wasn't, but it's just, you know, very believable that they could have been. But alas, Zelensky then went on to sort of to use the tried and true means of getting the Western public support behind him, which is the Russian menace, you know, the good old-fashioned Russian menace. Oh, he said, he started talking about Putin's ambitions in the war. He said, quote, for him, we are a satellite of the Russian Federation. At the moment, it is us, then Kazakhstan, then the Baltic states, then Poland, then Germany, at least half of Germany, you know, end quote. Now, he goes on. He's obviously playing to this idea that he's trying to, Putin's trying to put the Soviet Union back together. He's not going to stop with Ukraine. You know, that's the narrative, the other narrative. Oh, he's not going to stop in Ukraine. He's going to keep going and going. If we enable him, if we enable Putin's aggression, you know, which which is an incredibly ignorant talking point that one can only have if you start the clock in 2022 and don't look at any context for how the war in 2022 began. Don't look at the Donbass war that went on for 8 years. Don't look at the Minsk agreements. Don't look at the fact that Russia was the only country to abide by their end of the deal in the Minsk agreements. Don't look at the fact that the French and the Germans have openly admitted that they were lying to the Russians about honoring the Minsk agreements when in actuality they were just arming the Ukrainians for war. Don't look at any of that. Don't look at the fact the Russians came in suing for peace and that the Russians pulled their forces out from the northern parts of Ukraine as a gesture of goodwill, so that the Ukrainians would sign the peace treaty in April of 2022, the very same year that they invaded. The Russians were willing to leave 2 seconds later if the Ukrainians were willing to agree to neutrality, and they were going to get security guarantees from all the major NATO states, from Turkey, from China, from Russia, and potentially from India. The greatest possible treaty conditions one could possibly get. Turned it down. And the only way you could say that the Russians are the aggressor here is if you ignore all of that and start the clock in 2022 and ignore the immediate attempt at making peace that the Russians made. That's the only way you can sit here and act as if Putin's the aggressor, and it is only with the assumption that Putin is the aggressor that you can then go on to say that he's gonna gobble up Poland, he's gonna gobble up Kazakhstan and the Baltic states. Now, granted, he might actually have a union between Russia and Kazakhstan at some later point in the future. I wouldn't count that one out, but it'd be for very different reasons and under a very different process than what's happening in Ukraine. If it were to happen, it'd be more similar to what's happening between Russia and Belarus, but, you know, I'll digress. He doesn't note Belarus in this list. He goes, at first it's us, then it's Kazakhstan, then the Baltic states, and then Poland, and then Germany, at least half of Germany, saying that he wants to put not just the Soviet Union back together, but that he wants to put the Warsaw Pact. He wants to control the Warsaw Pact again, going all the way up to, like, halfway through Germany. And that's the fear-mongering, that it takes a complete lack of any context for one to fall into. And he continues saying, but, quote, even tomorrow, the missiles can fly to any state. That's what Zelensky told CBS on Wednesday. And he also says that, quote, this aggression and Putin's army can come to Europe, and then the citizens of the United States, the soldiers of the United States, will have to protect Europe because they are the NATO members. End quote. So, he's sort of backtracked on the idea that the Russians are going to come get us, because it's an absurd idea. And again, anyone who looks at a map can tell you why. But he sort of rolls it back and says, oh, NATO, Europe, the rest of Europe is in NATO and America's in NATO. So if Russia invades Europe, then America's going to have to send their soldiers to come fight. That's why you're going to end up fighting this war if you don't give us what we need to fight it for you, It's blackmail, it's extortion, but what can you say? The man's desperate. It's incumbent upon us not to succumb to such blackmail, to such desperation, to such blatant extortion. Now, will we? Not with Chuck Schumer in not with Chuck Schumer in the Senate, we won't. This is the fear angle. Because there's the pulling on your heartstrings, the, oh, we're poor little Ukraine, we need all the help we can get. There's that angle, and then there's the, you don't want Russia to come get you. You need big, strong Ukraine to fight this war for you. We're fighting for democracy, hitting all three notes. We're a poor, defenseless country and attacked by a stronger aggressor. You're afraid of the strong, you're afraid of that aggressor. We're fighting him for you, okay? We're going to keep you safe. So you just give us the money. You just give us the weapons. We'll fight them for you, right? And then there's the, we're doing it for democracy. Hitting all the good, the right talking points to get all the donors who own Congress to give him that money. He's playing all of his cards right. It's just that the game has changed. It's literally just that. The game has changed, and that's no longer enough because the game is... still in the process of changing. The MAGA Republicans are in, and they're holding that shit hostage like they should. But, I mean, if you have the cards, you may as well play them. Again, 2 to 3 months from now is when he expects this Russian offensive to happen. So if he's going to play his hand, now's the time. Not tomorrow, not next week, not next month. Now's the time. Like, that money is not any closer to coming to Ukraine than it's going to be, than it has been for the past half a year now, damn near. It's not any closer than it was half a year ago. If he's going to play his cards, he may as well play them now, and he's playing every last one. He's playing his entire hand. And I just don't think it's going to be enough. I just don't think it's going to be enough. People are tired of the we need to be afraid of Russia. Russia's going to come get us. People are tired of that. People are tired of hearing Ukraine beg. People are tired of this. People are really tired when they see the quantity of money that's already been given. People are tired. And I don't think that the old tactics are going to work when that kind of political pressure is on the very same politicians. Now, he also called this a war against democracy. Putin's war against democracy, specifically. Which is ironic, given that Russia just had elections and Ukraine has canceled theirs until further notice. Zelensky also said, quote, "Only those are tired who are not at war, who don't know what war is, and who have never lost his or her children," end quote. And he's obviously directing that at us, saying that you just don't understand, okay? You're not at war. You don't get it. This is our fight, you know? And another angle, you know, back to the sob story, the tragic backstory angle, again, playing every card he has available, because it's now or never. He says that, quote, "The USA is helping Ukraine, and we are grateful for their support, for this multilateral support. But the United States don't have a war going on," which is a lie. We've been at war for quite some time, just not in this war. He says, quote, "But it can come to Europe and to the United States of America. It can come very quickly to Europe." And he says to America, again, based off of the NATO connection. Which tells us everything we need to know about whether or not we should be in NATO. If Europe can end up at war at any moment, why should we be in NATO? You know, I think he has made a really good case for why the United States should leave NATO, but I don't think that was his intention, but, you know, I'll take what I can get, you know. But yeah, that's his last plea. The final plea. An entire essay on why Ukraine needs more. An admission that the propaganda press has been lying to us about the Russian ammunition situation, an admission that Ukraine is at the end of its rope and cannot handle a major offensive operation from the Russians, an attempt at getting us in any way possible, shape, or form to commit to the war, because Putin's going to attack everybody, it's not just going to be us, you know, it's a grinding artillery war of attrition, where neither we nor Europe, nor Ukraine are producing anything close to the numbers of artillery to compete with the Russians. And mind you, 70% of the casualties have come from artillery. Ukraine is losing. That is the takeaway of this article. Ukraine is losing. Ukraine is fading. And it's fading fast. And this was Zelensky's last plea. His last roll of the dice to try to get us to give him more. And I don't think it's going to work. I just don't think it's going to work. I think the gears have already shifted, and this side of the equation, the side that's been backing Ukraine at the institutional level, they've already shifted gears towards managing the fallout of the propaganda. Managing, trying to walk back the propaganda enough to get ahead of the story and manage the blowback, manage the collapse of Ukraine, manage the total strategic defeat that they have suffered at the face of the Russians. and the total collapse of Ukraine. They've already shifted to crisis management, not crisis resolution. And I think that, I think Zelensky has played his hand. I just don't think it's going to work out for him. But that is something we'll just have to wait and see. And that, my lovely listeners, is all I have for you today. Ooh, I do hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast on my geopolitical podcast. The world is changing, folks. Time is running out for Ukraine. But no matter how the world changes, we will have fun watching that change together. Now, I've been your host, Hyshon Wade, and you've been listening to This Week in Geopolitics. So till we meet again next Monday, Servus.